play fake this time. Blake throws toward the end zone. Once Marquise Lee, leaping attempt by Marquise Lee near the goal line. Touchdown! Touchdown, Jacksonville! Bortles to Marquise Lee on the first drive of the game. Ivory, the tailback. Bortles gives it to Chris Ivory, running to the right side. Chris is into the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown, Jacksonville! He scores from a yard away, and the Jags have extended the lead again. Shotgun for Bortles. They run a reverse.
So we've had that play in for about 8 weeks now. I think that was the fifth time we called it. Finally got the corners overlooked that we needed, and I kind of got excited. Keith's first throw in a game, my first catch in a game, and it ended in a touchdown. So it was huge, kind of just a little icing on the cake.
Marquise Lee's going to throw it back to Blake. Blake is open to the five, into the end zone, touchdown. There's a gadget for you. Marquise Lee took the toss from Bortles, and then he threw a pass back to his quarterback for the touchdown.
Jags 31, Titans 17. Matt Castle drops the throw. Throws the left of that ball.
Intercepted. Jalen Ramsey, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. A pick six for Jalen Ramsey. And the Jags are pouring it on the Tennessee Titans.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, welcome in, everybody. I hope it was worth the wait, as I got a lot of that on Twitter. No Jaguars today to celebrate Victory Monday. Hope you enjoyed Victory Monday.
Yeah, I was
Monday
wondering what was going
way.
On. You know, I come by here yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, and I'm like, hey, where are the guys?
Talk to management, all right? They kicked us out. They forced us to take December 26th off. And
that's a good thing.
I'm okay with that. That's the way it went. But let's have 10 more of those brand new opens next year from Tyler.
That would be nice.
10 or 12.
That would be really nice.
And that ballpark, it's always more exciting. I mean, what a complete game that they played. Now, certainly there are mistakes that are made, and you could point to different things that didn't go right. But overall, every phase contributed. I thought there were no glaring weaknesses. Is second game of the season, they've marched right down the field with the opening kickoff and scored a touchdown, which had been such a long drought.
What game was that? I was trying to remember during the broadcast.
Was it the Buffalo game?
Remember.
Well, they drove right down. I think it was Buffalo.
I think it was Buffalo, yeah. Right? And it had been the first time since week two of last year, right, that they did that.
Yeah.
And so it hasn't been very frequent this season. But, right, set the tone right away. And we wonder, I mean, that was a lot of talk during the pregame. Is this going to – you can go both ways. When you switch coaches, a couple weeks left in the season, you could be trying to protect yourself for the off season. You don't want to be in one of those rehab situations like Marcus Mariota finds himself in for the next 4 to 5 months. But they responded big time.
Well, and I look at, there's been a lot made of, you know, what the coaching change would do. You know, like I got to give some credit to the staff as a whole, Doug Marrone, the staff as a whole, but also Gus Bradley. I mean, because you know what, you look at the New York Jets. I mean, week in and week out for the last three, four, 5 weeks, they've been pathetic. I mean, pathetic.
Hey, they beat the 49ers, pal.
I mean, yeah, but Mike, come on. Come on. You know, and but this team, I mean, you watch them, and they've played hard. They've played physical. They've battled to the end in most games. I'm not saying that they played well to the end, but I don't think we've ever questioned effort with this football team.
Not in the last 2
long.
Months.
No.
I think you –
Tennessee game?
The Tennessee
oh,
game.
Oh, all day long. Yeah. You know, take your shots at that game all you know,
right.
And look, we were doing it during the broadcast.
Sure.
I mean, it was terrible. But, you know, down the stretch, I think, is when you're losing like that, I think it's a credit to the staff and it's a credit to Gus and the players. I mean, you got to give them credit because, you know what, it's very easy to say at that point, you know what are we playing for? We're playing for nothing, you know, so you don't – I'm not saying that you consciously say, you know, I'm packing my bags, but sometimes, you know, it just happens. And this team hasn't done that. So give them credit for that. It was a fun game to watch. It was exciting. And I think the most exciting part for me was that this was a game in which the fans got to stay to the end and cheer in a winning moment. And it's been, 376 days since the last victory at Everbank, and that's a long time.
You didn't need an offer at Everbank for the 2016 season. Extend the losing streak to 10. There's so many things that this win was able to break the streak of. It doesn't erase what came before it. It's still a terrible season for Jaguar football at 3-12, but at least you get to feel a little bit better.
You get a moment in time.
You do.
You
know, you get to spoil probably the most hated team in your fan base's eyes, chances to go to the postseason.
Well, they were controlling their own destiny. You know, it was former Jaguars head coach Mike Mularkey. You know, I mean, it was the only thing that would have made it better is that if you made it a three-game run, you know, where you got Houston, you got Tennessee, and then you got Indy.
Right.
You know, and then you could have been looking at maybe, you know, the second-best record in the AFC South, and, you know, who knows, maybe tied for the best record in the AFC South.
Now, you look at some of the quarterbacks that are going to be suiting up in the AFC postseason this year. It's getting pretty
thin.
Scary. It's thin. Yeah. Right now, if I'm New England, I'm smiling. If I'm Pittsburgh, I'm smiling. If I'm Kansas City, I'm smiling. I think one of those three teams clearly going to represent the AFC. It would be shocking at this point to me any other outcome.
Yeah, and, you know, look, I think the team, you know, we were talking obviously the two big injuries of Mariota and then Derek Carr, and the injury to Derek Carr that's the big one. You know, I mean, they are – He was having an excellent season. You could argue that he was the best passer in the league. Certainly, could make the argument that him and Tom Brady were the best in the AFC. And their chances, you know, because they don't play great defense in Oakland, their chances have dramatically gone down. But I mean, that's a significant injury, and then Mariota's injury. You know, and when it happened, you know, with Mariota, the way you looked at the replay and that the ankle turned 90 degrees to the right. And I didn't say this on the broadcast, but I said it to myself. I said, that's a fibula. You know, tibia is the Joe Theismann thing where you see a break and the leg bends in an area it's not supposed to. A fibula break is typically when the ankle turns in a direction it's not supposed to go. And unfortunate, you know, I talked for a minute with general manager John Robinson after the game. And I just told him, I said, look, man, I hope Marcus is okay. You know, because you never want to see an opponent go down with an injury like that. You want everybody to stay healthy. You know, and Sheldon Day's first career sack, you know, he breaks a guy's leg, you know. Unfortunate. You know, but he's going to be fine. You know, the good thing about breaks are for Derek Carr and Mariota is that those things are going to heal, and typically all it does is take time. So that's a good thing for them.
Right. For Tennessee, you know, you weren't going to the postseason. Now it's really the blow to the Raiders because, you know, you're looking at a bye and Matt McGloin trying to take you to the promised land.
Yeah, and he's got some arm skill now.
Yeah, he's played a little bit, but
you know, compare him to Matt Castle, just purely arm. You know, Matt McGloin's got a chance. Matt Castle is who he thought he was.
Oh, those first two throws, those balloons, I was like, if they don't force a turnover in this quarter, they stick.
I mean, you know, an older quarterback, you know, just comes off the bench, you know, and his first couple throws, you know, that, you know, he's never been known for having a great arm.
No.
So you knew the first couple throws weren't going to be pretty, and I was kind of hoping that the first couple throws would be errant and then they would be interceptions. Didn't work out that way, but it worked out eventually later on. Yeah. So, but, you know, I mean, he's a you know, like most teams, you know, the backup quarterback is a guy that, you know, you don't ever want to see. You know, with the Raiders, you know, I think it's a little different. You know, you've got a quarterback that if you didn't have Derek Carr and if you had a Matt Castle in as a starter, you may be going, put McGloin in. We want to see him more. You know, he's got some skill. You know, let's see what he can do.
A lot of people here in Jacksonville wanted to see some other quarterback going into Week 16. So we'll discuss the state of that position and everything else Jaguar-related. If you've got questions for Jeff Logman, that's what we do on a Check the Tape Tuesday, doubling as a Victory Tuesday this week for one of the rare times this season. 641-1010 on the phone lines. Also, the text line driven by Duval Ford if you want to get in with your questions or comments there on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Logs 56 LOGS 56. Victory Tuesday. We're live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Jeff Logman here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jeff Logman lays down the law. Jeff Logman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Logman.
All right, logging in the house, Check the Tape Tuesday, Victory Tuesday for your Jacksonville Jaguars. 641-1010, the phone number. If you'd like to get in, Allen Robinson having a big game this week. No, if you expected it to happen, but if you look back, he had 15 targets the first time they played Tennessee. So you figure they'd probably have him heavily involved. And with McCourty out this week, I think it helped open things up. But Doug Marrone just talked about, you know, moving him around the formation logs. One of the questions we got in already today was, did they have that liberty, you know, under Gus Bradley, is something different about Marone's philosophy and the way they used Allen Robinson, or did they just go back to the film and look at something and say, hey, we need to try something different to try to free him up?
I don't know the answer to that, but I mean, when the offensive coaches are the same, so I don't know why they wouldn't have had the ability to do that before, especially when, you know, Gus's expertise was on the defensive side of the ball. I've never known or heard of him, you know, putting restrictions on the offensive staff like that, so I'm sure they had that ability. But, you know, when you're coming down to the end, I'm sure that you're like, hey, look, let's try something different, you know, and so credit to them. And the other thing is, the personnel grouping that they use, which, you know, Doug Marone talked about that, where they used 11 personnel, and that, you know, they were a little bit hamstrung, you know, because of the injury situation. You know, look, that was a good thing. You know, I don't want people to look at that as that was a challenging thing, because the Tennessee Titans, their weakness is in the back end. You know, so to come out and play a majority of 11 personnel, that actually worked out to the Jaguars' benefit, because that also coincided with the weakness of the Tennessee Titans. Their secondary, you know, is filled with guys. I mean, like you talked about, McCourty was out. The other guys that they've had, and they cut one of the other corners that they had earlier in the year. I think it was Parrish Cox.
Yeah.
And Bryce McCain wasn't even in the starting lineup. He's kind of a rotational guy. They had a Valentino Blake back there, who the Jaguars had a few years ago. And to be honest with you, I don't remember anything about Valentino Blake, which ought to give you an indication, not that I'm an expert on all of it, but I mean, ought to give you some indication that this is not a high-level player. So it worked out good for the Jaguars from that standpoint, you know, and you just needed a quarterback to play well. And that's plain and simple the answer. The scheme wasn't different. Allen Robinson moving around might have been a little bit different, but did it change the offense that dramatically? No, it was the execution of it. And to be right on point, the play of the quarterback.
Here's what Allen Robinson had to say about what he felt was different for him or led to his success this weekend.
Once you put the fear in them of us throwing the ball, you know, I think that opened everything else up. You know, I think even by you seeing some explosive screen plays, you know, as well, I think we were able to create the separation in the secondary as far as them covering pass and then the D-line rushing the pass, you know. So I think for the most part, you know, we were able to get the separation in the defense on all aspects, you know. Again, with the D-line and the front seven, you know, worried about rushing and for them covering the backs as well. And then for the secondary, for us, stretching the field vertically.
Doug Marone as well weighing in yesterday. He met with the media, or did a conference call with the media, and was asked if he sensed some relief. It had to be a frustrating stretch with Allen Robinson of just over 100 yards in five games combined. Leading into this one, had 147 on Saturday. Marone asked if he sensed relief from A-Rob after the game.
You know, the only thing I talked to him about this week was, hey, let's go out there. This is the things we got to work on. This is what people are doing. We understand it. You know, I told him early in the week, we're going to try to move you to Z, you know, a little bit with that position, you know, some different coverage aspects that they can play to the field. I thought he was outstanding as far as, you know, sometimes receivers, you know, you have to be careful. They don't want to move, you know, the comfort level. He was great. And I just told him, hey, let's just go out there and we got a pretty good matchup and we're going to go to you and, you know, we expect you to win and we're going to do everything we can to put you in that position.
He said,
played really well. You know,
he got more separation, I think, than we've seen all season long. Really.
Clearly. And part of that is I thought that just his execution was at a higher level. And I think part of it was that the competition was not at a higher level. And so I think a combination of those. And so, you know, credit to A-Rob. I think the one area that I think that was much better by A-Rob was that getting off the line of scrimmage. They were playing press, but they weren't really jamming at the line of scrimmage. And that's where A-Rob has struggled at times, that we saw, you know, against the Broncos we saw that, against the Vikings we saw that, and they got up in his face. But I don't know if it was the lack of execution by the Tennessee Titans or if that's just the way they play, but they chose not to try to jam him hard at the line of scrimmage, and he was able to take advantage of it.
All right, let's get some phone calls going this morning at 641-1010. We will start with Lamar, who's calling in from just outside Dallas, Texas right now. Good morning, Lamar.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Jeff. Good morning, Tony. Merry Christmas to you, gentlemen.
Same to you, buddy.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, I hate to lead off on Victory Tuesday with this question, but I want to go back to 2 weeks ago, Jeff, and it was obvious to me that the Texans were scheming to get Jadeveon Clowney a different one-on-one matchup so that they can maximize his effectiveness to the passer. My question is, Why haven't the Jaguars been scheming more to get Dante Fowler these types of matchups with different stunts so that he can get to the passer?
Well, I mean, it's a great question, and the first question that you have to ask in that, does his skill level warrant putting him in a position to where, you know, you're quote-unquote scheming to take advantage of his abilities? You know, right now Dante Fowler is not a polished player. He's not where Jadeveon Clowney is. He, I think, is better suited to leaving him in one area and letting him focus on that because, you know, look, Dante Fowler's not going to go to the right end and execute this move. He's not going to go as a stand-up spinner package, you know, Lawrence Taylor type, and execute this. Right now what Dante Fowler does best is speed up the field from the left side and then a looping stunt with the tackle on that same side. That's what he does best, and that's what they have him doing. Yannick Ngakoue, his best move is a chop power speed move to the outside on the right side. On the left side, he doesn't have it. You know, it's just, some guys can do certain moves on one side. They can't do it on the other. I was kind of the same way. I used to have a chop swim on the right side. I tried to do it on the left side, and I looked terrible.
Like throwing left-handed.
Yeah, it was weird. It was just different. You know, so I think right now they are scheming as far as Malik Jackson. They're moving him to the matchup that they consider to be favorable on the inside. But right now with two young players, that their bag of tricks or their tool belt only has so many tools in it. The best case for those guys is to leave them where their comfort level is. And right now it's Dante on the left, Yannick on the right when it comes to sub-package downs.
Lamar, we appreciate the question. Thanks for the call. Let's check in on the north side with Jarrell next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jarrell.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing well.
Good.
What's up?
Jeff, I wanted to know, where do you think Jalen Ramsey ranks with the top cornerbacks in the game right now with his play the last 2 weeks?
Well, it's a great question. Boy, I mean, I would have to put him right up there. I mean, right in the – in the. If you look at the last 2 weeks, I mean, I'm putting him in the top five. And I don't think there's any hesitation by me on that whatsoever.
Based on just his play in the last 2 weeks, or you think that has elevated him to top five overall?
No, I think that's has elevated him to top five. I mean, you take, you know, two interceptions in 2 weeks, and I mean, you and even looking at what he was able to do into the games, the first matchup against the Texans. I mean, he went and followed DeAndre Hopkins everywhere, and it was a great matchup. I mean, that was one of the most entertaining films I've ever watched, was watching him do that. Watching him match up against every best player that the opposing team has. There's not many corners in the league that teams trust to do that.
I don't know how many corners you could put on T.Y. Hilton and then put on Alshon Jeffrey. You know what I mean?
Two completely
different types of receivers. There are guys that can handle the big receivers or guys that can handle the smaller, quick guys. He seems to have a chance with all of them because of his size and his quickness.
And, you know, he makes it, you know, talking about how physical he plays, I mean, you can look at all the other corners, and I guarantee you that none of them play with a physical brand, the quality of tackling that he has. I mean, that's what I think separates himself into that into the overall category, is that specific category, is to be a physical presence. And you know, it wasn't perfect. There was a couple plays that, like the one DeMarco Murray was going to the south end zone, bounced to the outside, and Jalen should have had a little bit better leverage on that. He ends up missing him. Telvin Kinds runs him out of bounds, but it was like a 9-10 yard gain. You know, that wasn't good by Jalen. It can be better. But overall, I mean, he's a joy to watch. And this week on Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com, there's one play that he had as on the punt return team, that to watch him do what he did was like a wow moment. I mean, he's jamming the gunner, and then the gunner has Peyton Thompson coming from inside out to help double. Peyton Thompson takes the guy out because he kind of gets run over, and they get tangled up. They go to the ground. Jalen just says, okay, he's taken care of. He's got his head on a swivel, and he finds one of the tight ends for the Titans going down the field and crushes him. I mean, crushes him, allowed Brian Walters to have his best return of the game. So that competitive nature, you know, when you have a player that it means so much to them on their side of the ball, which is defense or offense, but then when they get on special teams and they're an elite player, to still continue that elite level of play over to special teams is very unique.
This, I know not everyone loves Pro Football Focus, but you might at least momentarily love them. With this one, Mike Renner of PFF put out yesterday that Ramsey over the past 4 weeks has been targeted 35 times, allowed 12 completions for a 34.3 completion percentage against for 145 yards, no touchdowns, a couple of picks, 8 pass breakups, a 24.1 quarterback rating. He was the highest graded quarterback in the league over the last 4 weeks combined.
Yeah, he shot up to 18 overall in their rankings.
Yeah, the play that I think really stands out to me, how many teams when you go against the Houston Texans and you're in the tight red area, goal line area, will leave a corner all alone against a DeAndre Hopkins and with no safety help. I mean, and line up and show it to you. Here we are. We're going to put Jalen on him. If you want it, go for it. Teams don't do that.
Right.
I mean, they just don't. And so, I mean, that just shows you how much supreme confidence the coaching staff has in him and how much he relishes in playing and executing it.
All right, we got to take a timeout. If you're on the line, stay right there, including Dwight, who says he has the answer to fix the Jaguars. We've all been waiting. I don't know why he waited to 16 weeks to let us know what it is, but stay right there at 641-1010. We'll get back to your phone calls. Also, check in on the text line driven by Duval Ford at the same number on Twitter and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, asking you to send your Jaguars questions for Jeff Loggeman on a Victory Tuesday live at Everbank. It's 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jaguars get the big win on Christmas Eve, 38-17 over the Tennessee Titans. And Doug Marrone yesterday with the Jacksonville media on a conference call talked about the team's grit.
When you put the ball on the ground and, you know, you have penalties, and we didn't have that many for the game. I think you got to always watch when they come, you know, when they come into a crucial situation. We wound up being fortunate on a couple of them, but I just thought that they felt comfortable with the plan. They felt comfortable with how we wanted to attack the Titans. And I think that's what they kept their focus on as through the game. So, and I just saw a level of focus knowing that, you know, when we took the field, we had goals in mind of what to do. And how to do them. And we credit to the coaches. They had a good plan. We put our players in position.
Jags wrap up the season on Sunday, New Year's Day, against the Colts in Indianapolis. With a JOI Daily Update, I'm Tyler Devitt.
You know, it was good to kind of get in a rhythm early. And I think really it kind of started with the first play, getting A-Rob involved early, picking up 6 or 7 yards on the first play, whatever that was. And then kind of just getting rolling, and we found a groove. It felt good the whole game. I thought Nathaniel did a really good job putting plan together and then calling plays, and the guys just kind of rolled with it, and we were able to execute for a while.
It was probably to date his best game of the season. I was very happy with the accuracy. No, overall, he was 68.4, I think, completion percentage, which obviously was his highest of the season. But I think more importantly was, you know, how good we were able to execute the deep ball. Even though we missed a couple, we were still 6 for 11, 41 yards and a touchdown. Passes that were thrown, you know, at least 15 yards. So I think, you know, that was important going into the game, trying to make the big plays. You know, I was happy that he came out and got off to a really good start on the opening possession.
That's Blake Bortles talking about how the Jags got off to a good start, followed up by Doug Marrone, the interim head coach of the Jaguars, talking about Blake's performance there. The accuracy, this is, I mean, what do you make of Blake's performance logs, considering the season he's had up to this point? I know there are going to be a lot of people that say, see, Gus Bradley is somehow holding him back, and now all it took was a change at the coaching staff, and everything looked better, everything looked crisper. Clearly, he played exceptionally well from what we've seen so far this year, but you can't forget what came before him this year. What do you make of the fact that he played this well at this particular point?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of dumbfounding a little bit. You know, you go all the way back to the preseason, and if you remember the Jets game, and you came away from that game and you're like, oh yeah, here we go. Okay, offense, they can run the football effectively. Got some 50-50 opportunities with A-Rob. He's making the plays just like he did the year before.
Picking up right where they left off.
Blake is making the easy throws look easy. And you came away from that game going, they're right where they need to be. And Blake is right where he needs to be, improving upon the previous year. And then the season started, and it just didn't happen. You know, it was the turnovers, et cetera, and never kind of found a rhythm. You go back and you go, man, that third preseason game to where they didn't show what we kind of were expecting, right? And you go, man, was that the game that kind of just derailed it a little bit? You know, so I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to explain that because, I mean, how do you explain to where consistency all of a sudden gets thrown a curveball to where you get one game that's out of the norm of what we've been seeing? So I don't know how to explain that. You know, what was different? Well, you know, they changed the head coach. Is the head coach that big of a difference? Was the scheme that different? No, the X's and O's, for the most part, are all the same. I mean, they've had same exact offensive coaches on that side of the ball, with the exception of, obviously, the change from Greg Olsen to Nathaniel Hackett, but it's been the same ever since then. Well, we've never seen him play like that. You know, and to be perfectly honest with you, watching him in pregame warm-up, I was going, oh, uh-oh. I mean, it wasn't good. I mean, it really wasn't good. I mean, that's why the first completion that he had, which, you know, the corner's playing off, A-Rob just runs a simple out. It's a 6-7 yard completion. It's an easy throw. It's an easy catch. It's an easy play to execute. And the ball was on target in a spiral. And my comment in the game was, well, that was nice. Accurate, spiral, you know, on target. Because what I saw in the pregame wasn't any of that.
Right.
And then the ball, the deep ball to A-Rob. I mean, that was dead on the money. I mean, we've talked, what, for how long about Blake's ability to throw that ball that we call the drop in the bucket.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily a drop in the bucket throw because it didn't have the height where it's kind of dropping in. But, I mean, you want to talk about on target. I mean, that was a beautiful ball. And then later with Marquise Lee, you know, you got one-on-one opportunity. That's what we saw in the Jets game. That's what we saw Blake and A-Rob doing last year. And so you're like, okay, those are the things we've seen before. And what made that work this game versus not the previous games? I don't know the answer to that. Can you say it was all coaching? No. Can you say it was the player's mindset? I think that has more to do with it than anything. You know, I think for a number of years within this organization, you know, the drive to get better, then all of a sudden, you know what, your system gets shocked. And the shock is that reality is here. Reality is that you don't execute, coach is gone. You don't execute as a player, guess what? Conversation's already starting about who's going to be the next quarterback. Are they going to draft a quarterback? Are they going to sign somebody to come in and compete for Blake Bortles? Do you move on? That's a pretty big shock now. And I don't know if it necessarily hits home until the reality is seen. And the reality in this case, I think, was the coach getting fired.
Yeah, I can understand that. It's just still, you had to know. You know what I mean? Like, these conversations have been taking place for a while, and I don't believe that these guys aren't aware of what's being talked about. It's almost impossible to
stay
aware.
No, they're aware of it, but, you know, Mike, they don't ever have to deal with it.
No, I guess not.
Until it really happens. I mean, it's, you know, because that's different when it happens versus when it's talked about. It's very different.
And maybe there's a tightness that you play with because, you know,
sure.
The guys in this locker room, it's pretty clear that the vast majority of them really did like Gus Bradley and wanted to find some way to keep him here in Jacksonville. They just didn't play well enough to do it. And maybe there is that release.
You know, and there's something to be said for that, you know, that maybe this team knew coming in that, look, you know, this, we have to win for, you know, the coach to keep his job. And the owner said, you know, we expect winning and, you know, things like that. So, I mean, yeah, that's probably part of it too.
All right, let's get back to the phone lines. As I mentioned prior to the break, Dwight in Riverside says he has the answer to fix the Jaguars. So
right.
We await it. Dwight, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, my name is James White. And
okay.
And I want to wish both of y'all, you know, happy holidays. I'm sure we all know that the defense looks well, but the problem is on the offensive side. And I've been watching Dallas lately, and they shocked everybody in the draft. I think that if we go and get Leonard Fournette, at healthy Leonard Fournette, go into free agency, get your linemen, of course, as you mentioned, get someone to compete with Blake Bortles, that changes the dynamic of that offense. You already have the receivers, you got the tight ends, you're probably smarter than me in football knowing that defensive coordinators have the game plan. All the linebackers come up, plenty of room for Marquise Lee. and the other tight ends to move. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, look, I know what you're getting at, and yes, I agree with you from the standpoint of, you know, what Dallas has been able to do with drafting Ezekiel Elliott was key and has been a huge key to their success. But you got to remember, going all the way back to a couple of years ago, they had the number one back in the National Football League, I think it was, DeMarco Murray. If he wasn't number one, he was like top two or three.
They ran for like 1,800 yards 2 years ago.
Yeah, you know, so it wasn't necessarily Ezekiel Elliott. What was in place with the Dallas Cowboys was an offensive line that is viewed as, and it would be hard to argue against it, that's the best offensive line in football. And when you have the best offensive line in football, I mean, watching that game last night against Detroit, when Dak Prescott has the ability to sit back in the pocket, be comfortable, and survey it, and they're playing eight in the box, I mean, that makes it easy on a young quarterback. And would you like to have that? Sure. You know, you just got to go out and you got to draft, you know, two or three Pro Bowlers. You know, along
That's
the
all.
Offensive line. That's, you know,
but keep in mind,
not
last
everybody
year,
can do that.
7 1,000-yard rushes in the National Football League. Darren McFadden was one of them. And he's just an average back by league standards, but behind that offensive line, he was very productive. You know, look, that Ezekiel Elliott, I think, is a special player, and he is combined with a great
offensive line.
But to the larger point of whether or not they should be considering a running back at four, I don't think it's off the table.
No,
to me, and,
absolutely not.
I'm not 100% convinced that Leonard Fournette's going to be a better pro than Dalvin Cook myself.
Yeah, I haven't watched those guys. I mean, except for, you know, the highlight stuff on SportsCenter. But, you know, getting a better running back in here, there's no question it's going to help this football team. You know, they thought that they were, you know, getting some of that with the signing of Chris Ivory in free agency, because you can't draft, you know, you can't address everything in the draft in one fell swoop. So, you know, I think that eventually they're going to go and they're going to draft a running back very high.
They need a complete back with the speed.
You don't even necessarily need a highly drafted running back. I mean, there's other teams that have found running
backs. David Johnson's the third round pick, and he's
great.
Phenomenal all year long. Le'Veon Bell's a second round pick for that matter, and hard to argue that those aren't two of the top three backs in the league, maybe along with Ezekiel Elliott right now.
You need more production and performance out of the running backs. I will say that. You know, the offensive line, you know, has been adequate. You know, it's not like they've been poor all year. I think there's more yards on the table that the offensive line has created, and the running backs haven't taken advantage of. Now, you also have to understand that, look, Chris Ivory had the undisclosed injury earlier in the year, which I think set him back tremendously. And then recently the hamstring, T.J. Yeldon has had the ankle. But I still believe that, look, if you think that that's good enough, then I think you're making a mistake.
It's just tough for those guys to get the chunk plays. They don't do, you know, a big play for them is 15.
They don't scare anybody.
It's a 15, not a 50, when they get that big hole.
You got to have – look, when coordinators are looking at this offense, they respect A-Rob. They respect, you know, Marquise Lee. Are they in fear or have great respect of Chris Ivory or T.J. Yeldon? I think they respect them, but I don't think they fear them in any way.
All right, we got to take a timeout here. We'll come back. This State in Football, the Honda Driver on the NFL. If you're on the line, we'll get to you coming up after that at 641-1010. Keep the text coming in. We'll hit the text line, driven by Duval Ford as well, shortly. Every Tuesday we ask you, from our friends at the Tom Bush Family Dealerships, your social media question of the day. Just send your questions for Jeff Logman. We'll hit up a bunch of the Twitter and Facebook questions we've got in for you as well. Go rapid fire as we go along there. But the questions continue to pour in on the rare Victory Tuesday for the Jacksonville Jaguars. This State in Football and the Honda Drive around the NFL straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, This State in Football History.
All right, here we go. This State in Football History, December 27th. We go back to 1942. The first 5 years the Pro Bowl was played, it was a group of NFL All-Stars playing against the defending NFL champions, okay, in the Pro Bowl. And the first 4 years of the Pro Bowl, the defending champs beat the collected All-Stars. The Giants, the Packers, the Bears twice all beat the All-Stars. So 1942 marked the first time that the NFL All-Stars, coached by Hunk Anderson, head coach of the Chicago Bears, beat the Washington Redskins 17-14. Other results on this date: 1953, the Lions beat the Cleveland Browns 17-16 to claim the NFL championship. Imagine that, the Lions and the Browns meeting for the NFL championship. 1959, the Baltimore Colts defeated the New York Giants 31-16, also for the title. And in 1964, the Browns knocked off the Colts 27-0. Famous birthdays for this date. How about little man James Stewart, Jaguar, second overall pick by the team, the 19th selection in the 1995 draft, second only to Tony Boselli in franchise history. James Stewart, best season was 1999. He ran for 931 yards and 13 touchdowns in a Jaguar uniform. Would spend 4 years with the Lions after that as part of a nine-year career. James Stewart, 45 years old today. Others of note, 1978. Saw the birth of Deuce McAllister, a two-time Pro Bowler for the New Orleans Saints. He's 38 years old. Carson Palmer is 37 years old today, a three-time Pro Bowler. And Jamal Charles turns 30 today, four-time Pro Bowler and a two-time first-team All-Pro. Jamal Charles has one of the highest average per rush in league history. In fact, he's second among running backs. Marion Motley, who was a fullback, is a tick higher. He's Jamal Charles, a 4.7, I believe, yards per rush in his career. A couple of QBs, Michael Vick and Randall Cunningham, have higher averages. 4.7 might be actually even a 4.9. I don't have it right up in front of me right now.
4.9 sounds right.
4.9 does sound right to you. All right, yeah. That may be it. Fred Taylor, by the way, said 4.6, I think, is tied for like 23rd, something like that.
Running backs get old so fast. Like Jamal Charles, he had the knee injury last year, and it already feels like Kansas City's moving past Jamal Charles going into the future. And you mentioned Deuce McAllister, who it felt like, you know, just a couple years ago was one of the top running backs in the league. He's only 37, and it's done. It's over for him.
Long done.
So many positions where guys play to that kind of age and just can't do it at that spot.
You know what? It's 5'5 for Jamal Charles. Had to be higher than that, what I was looking at. 5'5. Marion Motley, I think, was 5'7.
That's crazy.
For a running back.
I was watching yesterday, watched the Indianapolis Colts versus Minnesota Vikings, and obviously that was the first game that Adrian Peterson has come back. He did not look good, no.
No.
He didn't look good to start the year, either.
You sit there, and if you're the Minnesota Vikings or if you're any other team in the league, you're going to go, you're not.
Right.
Not $18 million off of what you've seen in this past year now.
All right, well, that's all I got, so that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys improved to 13-2 last night with their 42-21 win over Detroit. The win for Prescott ties him with Pittsburgh's Ben Roethlisberger for the most wins by a rookie quarterback in league history with 13 in 2004, Big Ben's rookie season. He went 13-0 in the regular season, won a divisional round playoff game before losing to the New England Patriots in the AFC Championship game, so actually won his first 14 starts. The Cowboys have locked up the number one seed in the NFC playoffs. On the Detroit side of things, their loss sets up a showdown for the NFC North Division title against Green Bay on Sunday Night Football this week. Neither Green Bay nor Detroit have locked up a playoff spot yet in the NFC. Both could, depending on the outcomes of games leading into Sunday Night Football. The Oakland Raiders still have some work to do to lock up the number two seed in the AFC after the West and winning the West after the Kansas City Chiefs win on Sunday Night Football. The Raiders will now be going forward without quarterback Derek Carr after he suffered a broken right fibula on Saturday against the Colts. Carr is expected to be out 6 to 8 weeks, so he could potentially return for the Super Bowl if the Raiders were to advance that far in the NFL playoffs. Matt McGloin will fill in for the Raiders in the meantime. This week, the Raiders close out their season against Denver with a win clinching the division and the two seed, while the Chiefs close out against San Diego. If the Chiefs win and Raiders lose, then the Chiefs would win the AFC West and earn the two seed in the AFC playoff picture.
All right, there you go. This state in football, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, and the number to get on board, 641-1010. If you'd like to do that, got a lot of questions coming in on social media. Let's get back out to the phone lines first. So Hunter in Fernandina Beach next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Hunter.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, man?
We're always talking about this running back. You know, is that the number one priority for our draft pick, or is there another absolute, this is what we need in the draft, or is it a running back? Is that the number one priority? I just wanted to ask you.
I don't know if, first of all, I don't think you're ever at the point with a roster to where you think that we're one position that we have to have. I don't think you do that. I think you end up reaching for certain players. So I think you
certainly
still,
not when you're 3-12.
No, I mean, and look, I mean, the reality is that, you know, you've got three wins, and the year before that, what did you have, five? You know, so if you think that you're close or you're one player away from having things hit on all cylinders, you're making a huge mistake. You know, so This team needs to worry about drafting really good football players and not missing, not worrying about specific positions.
Outside of quarterback, if you had a great player available to you at every position, who you take? What position?
Well, for me, I mean, I take the positions that have the most impact, you know, which are, you know, I mean, what's the number one, you know, statistic that we always refer to in wins and losses?
Turnover margin.
You know, so what players typically have an effect on turnovers?
Pass rush.
Pass rushers, pass protectors, quarterbacks, without saying, is always number one. But those players, the ones that can change a game, you know. So I think you got to look at into that category, you know. And I think offensively, for me personally, it would have to be a really special running back for me to use a first round pick on a running back, just because you've seen the track record of other teams and their ability to find running backs later in the draft. I think the positions that are hard to get, number one, is quarterback, clearly. I think the big guys is probably right up there, with the pass rushers being number one. And then the edge protectors, which is offensive tackles, are number two. You know, wide receivers, look, I think you feel good about what you got. But, you, like I said, with all positions on this football team, you don't think that you've got it solved. But I think you can find wide receivers that can have an impact. What was T.Y. Hilton? What round?
Third
was
round.
He?
Third, I think.
I want to say third round pick.
You know, you look at other top receivers in the National Football League. How many of them?
Antonio
all,
Brown is a fifth.
Yeah, I mean you can find
some of. I mean, you guys like AJ Green and Julio Jones were top 10 picks.
Yeah, but I think you can find that. But it's hard to find the big guys, and I think that the pass rushers or the defensive linemen. You know, look, even though you drafted Ngakoue, Fowler, the one thing that you don't really have is you don't have a power edge rusher or somebody that can rush the power or rush the edge with size, you know, because Ngakoue, Dante are kind of, you know, they're 245, 250-pound edge rushers. You know, I'd love to see a guy that's, you know, that's 275. And, you know, Woodyard, that's why I was so excited about him, because he was so different than Fowler and different than Ngakoue, and he's got a little bit different skill set. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of positions that you can go with.
Yeah, look, you can't do.
The positions you don't draft, though, safety, you don't. Linebacker in this defense, you don't. And I think guard, center, you don't. Fullback, you don't. Tight end, it'd have to be a really special, unique player.
Yeah, I'd see taking a guard before I take a tight end that high, quite honestly. With the, if you thought you were getting a Pro Bowl caliber guy.
Yeah, hard to argue with that. Look what the Dallas Cowboys did.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's the thing. You can't – I was going to say you cannot take – just because those positions may be more valuable, you still got to have – if you're picking in the top five, you got to get what you feel is a great player, mm-hmm. right? You can't just say, hey, let's take the best available pass rusher here if you don't think he's anywhere close to best available player.
That's right.
If it's close, that may be enough to sway you, you know.
Yeah, if it's even, then, you know, you take the position of need, you know, and – I've always believed you take the best available player, because the draft is always, you know, there's a percentage of success and failure that has been, you know, well documented over the years.
All right, here's a couple of things on the text line driven by Duval Ford. This one from Cole, who said the difference between this last game and the rest of the season was the Jags threw the ball early and on first down, and the aggressive passing set up the run, which set up play action. Jags are and should be a pass-first team. It takes the pressure off Blake, since the run-run pass has been so predictable. Do you agree with that, that the play calling was that much out of the ordinary from what we've seen all year long?
No, because I think earlier in the season you could make the argument, you know, and people were making the argument, you know, you got to run the ball more. You know, and that's kind of why they, you know, started running the ball more, because they were so pass-heavy.
The difference
early
was
in the
they
season.
Were effective. When they threw it early.
That's the difference. Execution is the difference in this game. It's not any magical game plan. It's not magical coaching. It's execution.
Let's see what else I've got here. Do you have a personal favorite? Would it be Coughlin or everybody else to be the next head coaching candidate?
I don't. That you would like to, you know, I don't. I want what is whatever it's going to take for this organization to be successful. And I think that through this process of, you know, looking for a coach, and I get the feeling, and I hope that this is going to happen, is that, you know, you evaluate everything along the way. Because I think if you just think that it was the coach, then you have a problem. Because that's no different than going into a draft saying, we need this guy to take us over the top. I don't think it's any different than that. So I think through this process of let's do this coaching search, you need to evaluate what you've done in other departments, everything, to make sure that you're going to get it right. Because that opportunity doesn't come along. Once you set it, you know, and it starts rolling again, it's not going to be time to reset and reevaluate again. You know, the most important thing is to get it right. Do I have a favorite? Yeah, I'm partial to Coughlin just because I know him and he's had great success. He has a track record. I got to admit that. Am I of the belief that he is the only answer for success for this organization? No. I think there's some very qualified, very good coaches out there.
I'd agree with that. Although this one from Dalton on the text line said, ask Jeff if the Thursday night Tom Coughlin show will be a better show than Check the Tape Tuesday. So that's
I can tell you this.
If you're making a prediction.
That Thursday night radio with Coughlin would be more challenging than it's ever been.
You think so?
Yeah.
Hey, compared to the last 4 years? Yeah, I would say so. I think that'd be a small price to pay.
Yeah, look, I got a lot of respect for Tom, and me and him have a very good relationship, and I would love to do it with him, you know, but just like I would love to do it with any other coach. I mean, I love what I do, and I love the ability to talk football and be involved. For me, it's an absolute ball.
Any chance the Jags offer a pile of cash to Eric Berry? Somebody wants to know if he hits free agency. Absolutely.
He's a stud.
Why wouldn't you?
Me personally, this year, I have not seen a better safety. Period.
I think a lot of people would argue that he's right there at the top of the list league wide.
I mean, for me, I mean, like when you, I mean, played him obviously.
The guys so you've seen, you the got tape some tape, on, right?
But guys that I have seen tape on, there's nobody that comes close. Nobody, and I'm talking close. Nobody.
All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back, get more of your calls at 641-1010. We'll also check in on some of the Twitter questions and Facebook submissions that you sent in for Jeff Loggeman on a Check the Tape / Victory Tuesday for your Jacksonville Jaguars with Fat Tony and Jeff Loggeman. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jeff Loggeman lays down the law. Jeff Loggeman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Loggeman.
Well, you probably saw this because this came out yesterday, but in case you missed it, as you were still in Christmas mode, TJ Yeldon, I was going to say Chris Ivory, TJ Yeldon on injured reserve officially with that ankle injury. The Jags pick up Daryl Richardson off of waivers from the Steelers to fill that role. He was with the Rams before that. I think they just need a body or two.
Well, you got Bronson Hill, who was brought up from practice squad, but he hasn't had a snap on offense yet that I remember. He's been mostly on special teams. So, I mean, I don't think he's going to come in the door this week and be playing on offense. It would be, you know, whoever's healthy that you've already got to, in this game.
Right.
You know, which will be
just a little depth.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Chris Ivory's hamstring, it didn't look like it was major, you know, where he's like, stopped and jerked and grabbed his hamstring.
But he definitely stopped.
Choked it down. There's no doubt.
He throttled down.
During the game, I'm like, what is he doing? Is he that concerned about fumbling where he's trying to protect the ball? But then we found out later that it was a hamstring. But yeah, look, if Corey Grant, Bronson Hill have to carry the load, well, let's go.
So be it. That's week 17 in the National Football League.
Ain't no different than anybody else.
6-4-1-10-10. Let's get out to Mimi on the South Side next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Mimi.
Happy New Year, Jeff, Mike, Tony, and Tyler.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you. On the game with Tennessee on Saturday where Jason Myers hit the 56, 50, and 48-yard field goals but missed his PATs, I have a couple of questions. Number one, is the missing of the PATs, even though the rule was in the new rules in the second year, a concern? And if so, what can Jason Myers do during the off season to improve his accuracy? Is it going to take coaching or is it mental or what do you guys think? And I'll take it off the air.
Thank you, Mimi.
I think it's all mental. I mean, how else do you explain that he is, you know, what is a PAT? How many yard field?
33.
33 yard
chip
field.
Shot.
Jason Myers from 20 to 39 is a perfect tennis player.
Hasn't missed one. He's only missed one below 50.
And he's 8 of 9 at 40 to 49. So he's
right.
Missed that one below 50. So that's pretty easy to figure out, right?
Right.
It's mental.
And really, prior to this weekend, had been pretty good on extra points this year. You look around the league, it's almost an epidemic with missed kicks, extra points.
Well, in a lot of cases, you know, weather plays into that factor with some other places, but not in this instance.
Do you think they're going to do anything with the ability to jump over the center?
Yes.
I
think they're going to shut it down.
Yeah. I do think that's had an effect.
I think they should shut it down, to be perfectly honest with you. Because for me, you know, I mean, if you're true to your motto, which is player safety, then you'll put a stop to it.
But in terms of Jason Myers, by the way, they're going to stick with him until it becomes – now, last year it was bad. 7 missed extra points, right? That was really bad. But they felt like they had such a talent in his leg, and he showed that this weekend.
It was unbelievable.
What maybe he was talking about. You look at – I mean, he was piping those. 56 – I mean, right down the middle into the net.
Yeah.
I had to laugh because Frank on the 56-yarder goes, that might have been good from 60. I'm like, 60? It was in the net.
How about 65
right,
plus?
That's like maybe 70 yards. I don't know what it would have been good from. But so it's for that reason that he's got such a powerful leg.
Well, I joked about this last year, and you know that you put him in one of those rooms, you know, like the GIMP, you know, and you bring him out and you say, all right, Jason, it's field goal time.
You take the mask off and the hood off and just roll him out there, right?
You don't tell him it's an extra point,
right, or it's kickoff time. Go split the uprights, you know, and that's another area where he's a weapon as well.
Oh, he's been fantastic on, you know, pinning the team back and making them start at 25, and it's a good thing because the coverage units have been poor, you know, so he's taking the pressure off of the kickoff coverage unit. You know, and I think Brad Nortman's been really good for Jason Myers. I mean, I think he's been a real calming presence. Brad Nortman, I think, has had a very good year. Very good year. And it's, you know, if you look at his numbers, he's had a couple games where he hasn't been great. But for the most part, and just like the punt that he had, what was it, like 55-ish, I think, and then a minus two on the return ended up being a 57 net on that one where they were backed up. He made sure that they didn't gain field position advantage there. You know, so I think those two are young, and I think it's a good two guys to carry into the future with.
By the way, Jason Myers, Tyler, tells us at home – he's only 31 of 38 on career PATs over the last couple of years. So he's missed 7 at home. On the road, he's 28 of 31. So he's 81% at home. He's 90% on the road. Is that statistically significant enough to think that that's a trend?
Maybe. I mean, that goes into the mental aspect of it, right? Because if you miss an extra point on the road, do you get booed?
No.
You get cheered.
Right. No, but the problem is he's missed 10. In 2 years, from that distance where, as we pointed out, he's missed one total kick from less than 50 yards
and only
all
9
season
field goals.
On field goals.
He's
right.
Missed more extra points than field goals in his career.
Which is crazy.
It is kind of weird. So, yes, mental seems to be the case, Mimi. Let's hope that continues to improve. Let's go to Jerry at the beaches next year on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jerry.
Guys, you know, it's been a rough year when you say Jason Myers has been the one bright spot on the team, you know, but
Bright spots now. We haven't said that he's been the only bright spot now.
Actually, yeah, there have been, actually. Ngakoue's been great, and so has our rookie cornerback.
Ramsey.
Wanted to ask about Julius Thomas. He's been a disappointment to the last couple seasons, and my question is, do you think the Jaguars will keep him another year, or you think they might cut ties with him after this season?
I would be surprised if they keep him. Based on his production, but you know, you never know what's going to happen because you don't know what the makeup of this organization is going to be going forward.
$3 million bonus due in March,
which plays a big part of it, and
I don't know if it's a bonus, but a portion of his compensation for next year will be
base.
$3 million, but guaranteed.
Yeah.
Of
yep.
it. Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen there, but I do know this, that I think Neil Sterling has given you know, a sense of feeling good about his growth and his development as a H-back slash move tight end, you know, making the move from wide receiver at, was Monmouth?
Yes.
Monmouth yep. College, you know, small college. So, you know, and his hands have been better than what I expected, you know. So a credit to him because, you know, making a positional switch and having to gain weight and learn how to block. And, you know, the biggest criticism that I have of Julius Thomas is, you know, in order to take advantage of that position, you have to be a balanced attack. You have to be a good blocking tight end. I'm not saying you have to be dominant, but you have to be more than willing and you have to be effective. And I think that's the one area that he has, I think I expected more from him than what I've seen. And because he hasn't garnered the respect, and I think he got better as a blocker this year, but I think he hasn't gained enough respect from opposing coaches to gain the great matchups that you'd like to have from a tight end.
Yeah, by the way, you can be a great offense without having a great, highly productive tight end. You don't have to have a great player at every position. You look at the Raiders, have been one of the better offenses this year. Clive Walford, I think, is a talented guy, but he's very underutilized, let's say, with the Cooper and Crabtree on the outside and all the different running backs that they get the ball to, Seth Roberts at wide receiver. So there's plenty of examples of good offenses out there that don't have an explosive tight end. Or if you look at what Kansas City has been able to do this year, Tyreek Hill is their one wide receiver of note making any kind of plays, but and they do have a tight end and running backs that, you know, you need three or four playmakers. They don't necessarily have to be at the tight end position.
I think a little bit of the problem has that the offensively that you've seen is that there are so many guys you want to get touches to, you know. So instead of the quarterback kind of going into games to where he's like, I'm going to take the guy that's open, he almost feels compelled that I have to get Julius involved early. I have to get A-Rob involved early, you know, instead of dropping back and playing quarterback. And just ignoring the names on the back of the jerseys. I think that has been an issue at times for this football team. And I want to go back because he said, you know,
sure.
when he was talking about bright spots, there's one player in particular that I want to bring up. And he's probably not even on most people's radar. And that's Avery Jones. Avery Jones has played at a phenomenal level since Roy Miller went to IR. And I don't think he's getting a lot of recognition. The plays that he made on the goal line last week were tremendous. This week he continues to make plays against the Tennessee Titans. He was dominant. And credit to him. Credit to Dave Caldwell on that one, an undrafted guy from Georgia that his senior year he was injured a ton. And when he first came in here, he didn't look like nothing. You know, he's one of those guys that – you know, when you see him walk in the door, you know, he's a pretty big guy. He's probably a football player. But then when you watch him athletically, you're like, eh, he's probably pretty limited. But when he plays the game and the helmet comes on and it's 1 o'clock on Sunday, he plays. And he plays really well. And I think you could make the argument that he might have outplayed Roy Miller.
Really?
I will go that far.
So you think there could be a change in the offing there?
Maybe.
Potentially?
Yeah. And here's the other thing about Avery Jones. Avery Jones can play nose. Avery Jones can play three. Avery Jones can play in this defense, that 4B, the strong side defensive end.
We don't know who the head coach is going to be. We don't know what the defensive staff is going to look like. Right? There's some thought that maybe Todd Walsh gets retained. Let's say they don't.
I hope that you are able to keep some continuity on defense.
Understood. And I think that'll greatly depend on, obviously, who gets hired as the head coach and whether or not they've got their kind of collection of guys. I think there's a more likelihood of that happening maybe with Tom Coughlin is hired because his network, you know, that he's had over the years with the Giants, a lot of those guys are still with the Giants. Anyway, do they have the personnel to make the switch to a 3-4? If you had a defense coordinator that really believed in that, if you looked at this team and you said, you know what, it's not going to be a 2 or 3 year process to transition. Do they have enough to be competitive playing a 3-4 defense next year? With assuming they're going to add a couple of pieces through the draft or free agency, like they do, regardless
yes.
of what defense they're
playing. Yes, because the difference between a 3-4 and a 4-3 nowadays in the National Football League is very small. You know, nobody's playing a 3-4 defense to where you have a true head up nose tackle that's two gapping. You don't have defensive ends.
Steelers don't do that?
No. No, they're playing shaded noses, and they're playing and their defensive ends play almost the same way that the Jaguars play Tyson Alualu. That strong side end 4B. That's how they play them. the Tennessee Titans that run a 3-4. They play Jarrell Casey essentially as a 3 technique, and then they've got a 4B on the other side and a shaded nose. I mean, no teams play an old-school traditional 3-4 like we've come to know it. I mean, this hybrid defense that they've been running here with 4B and the Leo position is essentially it's a 3-4. There's a few minor differences as far as how you play the strong side end, or should I say the Leo position when he's on a tight end. But other than that, there's not a lot of difference. And you've already got Malik Jackson played in a 3-4. He can play a 3-4. Avery Jones and Roy Miller can play a nose tackle in a 3-4. Zenderic Marks could play defensive end in a 3-4. So, yeah, that would not be an issue.
They've got enough personnel to do it because that question comes up all the time. All right, we've got a stack of them here. We'll go rapid fire on the other side as we get ready to wrap things up. Midday Chalk coming up at the top of the hour. Victory Tuesday almost in the books, and we'll continue to check the tape here with Jeff Loggeman, Tony Smith, and Mike Dempsey here with you live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jaguars 38, Titans 17 on Christmas Eve, and a big part of the offense having a great day was Allen Robinson, 12 targets, most since Week 10 against Houston, 9 catches for 147, only the second 100-yard game for A-Rob this year. Here's Doug Marrone on A-Rob.
You know, the only thing I talked to him about this week was, hey, let's go out there. This is the things we got to work on. This is what people are doing. We understand it. You know, I told him early in the week, we're going to try to move you to Z, you know, a little bit with that position, you know, some different coverage aspects that they can play to the field. I thought he was outstanding as far as, you know, sometimes receivers, you know, you have to be careful. They don't want to move, you know, the comfort level. He was great. And I just told him, hey, let's just go out there and we got a pretty good matchup and we're going to go to you and, you know, we expect you to win and we're going to do everything we can to put you in that position.
With your Jaguars Daily Update brought to you by JOI, I'm Tyler Devitt.
All right, final segment of Jaguars Today this morning live at EverBank. Some news from the National Football League as Rex Ryan has been relieved of duties with 1 week to go. Former Jaguar coach Anthony Lynn, a running backs coach here, offensive coordinator in Buffalo.
I like Anthony Lynn. He's a quality, high-class individual.
He's the interim. And, you know, with 1 week to go, you wonder, had the Bills not allowed Andrew Franks kicked, I think, a 53-yarder to send it to overtime for Miami against Buffalo, and Buffalo wins that game, are they firing Rex Ryan today? Maybe, maybe not. You know, the Jags claim they had made the decision to fire Gus win or lose after the Minnesota game, no matter what the outcome was against Houston, so maybe, maybe not. But clearly, with the report about a week ago that the Bills' top priority in a head coaching search would be Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin is one of those guys that you could talk to at any point because he's not tied to another team. You don't have to ask permission. And with the Jags expected to do just that, if I'm Buffalo and I am interested in him, I'm not going to wait either. If I know it's coming in a week, what you don't want to have happen is next Monday or Tuesday have somebody else announce that the guy you wanted to talk to is their next head coach. I'm Buffalo, you know, and most coaches, even though contact can get made behind the scenes, coaches are not going to sit down for an interview for a job that doesn't have a vacancy because they don't want it happening to them. Like, Tom Coughlin's not going to go for a formal interview.
Well, Tom Coughlin wouldn't.
I think most coaches.
There are other coaches, Mike.
Well, you couldn't do it during the season anyway.
No, I'm talking about coaches that
Are unemployed.
Even coaches that are employed. There are coaches that are employed that I guarantee you they have been making phone calls to.
Oh, I don't doubt
Rams,
that there's some of that stuff behind the scenes.
Jaguars,
but I'm talking about bring the guy in for the whole formal,
right.
You know, spend the day with the organization kind of situation.
Yeah, you can't do that, obviously. But I mean, it's no different than what, you know, the free agency was a couple of years ago, to where the agents are, you know, talking to teams, et cetera, you know, well before when the opening of free agency, you know, would begin. I mean, that, to me, there would be no difference there.
All right, a couple questions for you here, Logs. Let's go kind of rapid fire. I don't know if the stats back it up. This is Tony on Facebook. I don't know if the stats back it up, but it looked like our run blocking was vastly improved this game versus the overall season. Was it, and if so, why?
Yes, it was much better. I jokingly said this during the game broadcast. I said, man, to get Doug Marrone out of the offensive line room make a difference? Wow. But, look, they played very well up front. Tyler Shatley played very well up front. Very much a strong credit to him. You know, and you've heard the conversation the last couple weeks about, you know, well, we're on our sixth guard. No, you're not. You're not on your sixth guard. You know, Tyler Shatley had been considered a quality swing backup at center in the two guard spots right away in training camp. So I didn't want to hear that we're on our sixth guard, because you're not.
Well, he is the sixth one to play guard.
Well, he's the sixth one to play guard, but he's not your sixth guard.
Well, then why didn't he play ahead of the other guys?
Well, because they had him at center for some reason and only center for a long period of time.
All right.
But he's not a sixth guard. For God's sake.
Says the Tyler Shatley lover over here, who's been hyping it for the last 2 years.
He played well. Look, he's a good football player.
I understand.
Good football player.
Somebody's got to be number six. It's all right. Let's go to Daniel.
Now, let me add one more thing.
Yes.
A.J. Cann needs to play better.
We've mentioned that. You've mentioned that in particular.
He needs to play better. Now, I said this before, that you know, next year, after all the snaps that he's taken at left guard at South Carolina, you know, you might look at that.
Moving him to the left side.
Yeah, take a look at him at left guard. Is he going to get more production and have a higher ceiling at left guard? It's got to be talked about.
Now, off the air earlier, you said Parnell's been playing well lately.
Last couple weeks, you know, and look, everybody fights through things during the season, but Parnell had a stretch there earlier in the year to where you could see that he wasn't bending his knees, and I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure that he had something going on. Just like every NFL player does, but the last couple of weeks he's been pretty good. You know, and Derek Morgan was a good test last week. Derek Morgan's a good football player.
So then how pressing are the needs on the offensive line? I mean, where are you looking to, you know, I mean, if you feel like you need maybe a guard, that doesn't seem like, or do you feel that that's not necessarily the case, would you be looking to upgrade the right tackle position?
I think you look to upgrade everything. I mean, you even look at upgrading left tackle. I mean, you can't assume that Kelvin Beachum is going to get back to being healthy.
But are you going to pick up his option?
Yes.
All right, so if you pick up the option at $10 million,
because it's a very, very fair contract.
Right, so how much draft capital are you going to be willing to invest in that position if you're going to
If you've got a tackle who's the highest-rated player on your board and he played left tackle in college, you pick him, and whoever the best two tackles are, you play him. You know, if the best tackle combination is, you know, Kelvin Beachum at left and, you know, drafted tackle at right, you go with that. If it's Parnell at right and this, you know, draft pick at left, you go that way.
My nephew Cam is here from he goes to the University of Alabama. I asked him, should we take Jonathan Allen if he's there for us, because he's an Alabama product. He said Cam Robinson is the guy, who is actually, if you look at Rob Rang's latest mock draft today, the highest rated offensive lineman in there. He had him going ninth overall. Known as a better run blocker than a pass blocker, but maybe the best that college football has to offer this year on that scale. Anyway, I know a lot of people are.
I look forward to watching those guys.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's obviously, you haven't hit the tape on all these guys yet. I know a lot of people are thinking about the running backs, whether it's Fournette or Cook at that position. Got a long way to go. I think Stevie tweeted out today, Irish Shag, 131 days to the draft. I did not do the math to confirm that. But the countdown has
sounds like
begun.
He has.
That, it does sound like he has. Daniel on Facebook, here's a question we've gotten a lot recently. Why is Miles Jack not getting more playing time?
He got a lot of snaps the other day.
What does he need to improve on to get on the field more? What are you seeing from him?
Just keep doing what he's doing. You know, look. Miles Jack's natural position is weak side backer. You know, so you're in a little bit of a tough spot in that, you know, you're not going to take Telvin Smith off the field. You know, at some point when his level of play exceeds that of Telvin or Paul Posluszny, then you put him in there. You know, but he got a lot of snaps at Otto this past game, and he played very well. He played with high energy. I thought that he was very effective. I don't want to say it was his best game yet, but it was a very strong game for Miles Jack, and he's just got to continue to work. You know, at some point, you know, there will be an opening somewhere for him.
We know we've covered this a lot this morning in the first hour, but Josh says, have you ever seen a better 2 weeks of cornerback play than you've seen from Jalen Ramsey?
I can guarantee you I've never seen it in Jaguars history.
Back-to-back weeks.
No.
Yeah.
No, you know, and I said this at the Houston Texans game, that, you know, barring, you know, the interception or the ability to change it, like Rasheen Mathis would, you know, pick six, whatever, you know, win a game, mm-hmm. I'd never seen, you know, play in, play out, physical play, passes defensed, matching up against the best guy. It's just we've never seen that here in Jacksonville, and it's a lot of fun to watch. And I can't wait to watch him get better because we haven't seen the best of him yet.
I think we've hit most of the high points, at least.
There was one other question. Somebody asked if my dad was at the
television show. Oh, yes, they did ask if your dad was out. Where did you guys do the
show?
Was
the resemblance that high?
I don't know. Somebody said, Logs, where did you do the show? Was it Mellow Mushroom?
Mellow Mushroom, yeah.
They said, Jeff, was that your dad at Mellow
Mushroom?
That
was my dad.
Yeah.
Yep, he was in town for Christmas.
There you, awesome. There you go. I met Tyler's dad on Sunday, and I know exactly what Tyler was going to look like in 20 years. I mean, seriously, The resemblance was uncanny.
If I look like my dad in 20 years, I'll be very happy.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's in great shape.
If I look like my dad in 20, well, he didn't make it. He made it to 60. So if I make it 20 more years, I don't know what I'm going to look like, but I'll be well past the expiration date of the Dempsey men, unfortunately. All right, Logs, where are we going to catch you over the next few days?
Let's see. Tomorrow night, Jaguars live at Dick's Wings and Grill, Youngerman Circle with Ashley Mitchum, Channel 4, 8 o'clock. Thursday, we will have Jaguars this week. We will have Doug Marone in for a couple seconds with me and JP. I'm not sure if Pacelli's calling a game. I think he's out of town this week calling a game for Westwood. Film Room Friday on Friday, outdoor show on Saturday.
No, there's no Thursday night football this week.
No Thursday this week.
Everybody's Sunday. No, yeah. No Thursday, no Monday, so nobody goes into the playoffs.
We'll have him in.
Everyone's got the same advantage or disadvantage.
Unless he's doing a bowl game.
He might be doing that. He's all over the map.
Yeah,
a lot of bowl games out there. We're gonna have.
I'm watching a bowl game yesterday. It's 2-6-6 teams. Who was that?
It was everybody who played yesterday.
I haven't seen a single snap of a bowl game.
There were three games yesterday. The best record between the six teams was 6-6. Mississippi State was playing a bowl game. They got in. They were 5-7 because they have too many bowls. And they don't have enough.
Right, they
qualified
don't have enough qualified teams.
So then it goes to graduation rate. So Mississippi State got in.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of an upset, isn't it?
Yeah, because
I got a question.
Vanderbilt going into the Tennessee game would have been the top 5-7 team to get in because of their graduation.
Did either of you two watch any of those bowl games
yesterday? I watched every snap of the Vanderbilt game.
I will first snap I will watch is Florida State Michigan on Friday night.
And I watched the fourth quarter of Mississippi State winning yesterday.
I've never been one of these early bowl watchers, though. I don't bet on these games. I don't have any interest in these games. I could care less if these games
are
played.
I was just hanging out at the house with my dad. So
it's just background
noise,
right?
Yeah.
If that. I don't even – you know what? I'm catching up on Westworld right now. So.
I got a question. When are the playoff games? Second?
Saturday. This coming Saturday. New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Okay, so good. Good. So then that's the two games, and then when's the national title game?
A week later, right?
Yeah, a week from Monday, I believe.
Okay, cool. I'll watch them.
It's all coming. We'll keep you posted.
I'll watch them.
All right, Logs. Thank you, buddy.
Enjoyed it.
There he goes, Jeff Logman. Check him out on Twitter, at Logs56, although he doesn't tweet very often. You can catch him every Check the Tape Tuesday here, including all throughout the month of January, as we talk NFL playoffs and Jaguars all season with you as well. So for Jeff, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, and my nephew Cam Nash, who came to visit us today down at the stadium, I'm Mike Dempsey wrapping things up. Midday Chalk is coming up next right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.